to start logging, and that's a major inconvenience. That's how they're finding the spikes in the logs once they get to the mill, too.
Yeah.
And that, as you've seen those things, you can't just roll them around to find spikes. It's maybe you'll find them, maybe you won't type of a deal. Not to mention the manpower that's expended there.
Okay. Jack.
The amendment I drafted, Madam Chair, the dash A2, changes the language the committee may want to consider on line 10 from bodily injury to serious physical injury. There is the main reason for doing that. It does raise the standard a little bit, but the primary reason is simply because bodily injury is not ordinarily the term used in criminal law. And serious physical injury is used in the assault statute, so it's made to track with them.
Senator Brinsky, do you have any problem with that?
No, I think it's a good idea.
I have another question. Would it, if there were a conspiracy to spike trees, would our regular conspiracy statutes get at that? Would that already be a crime? Because I would see that might be something we'd want to reach as well, is people
not
who...
Not in this bill, Senator Schiff.
Not in this bill, but would it be reached under existing law? I suspect that it would be.
I believe conspiracy has the potential of covering every substantive crime, Senator.
Okay, that was really my question.
As does attempts in response to Senator Hill's report.
Okay, further comments? Senator Grinsky?
Madam Chair, I'd like to, first of all, move the dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2375.
Are there objections to Senator Grinsky's moving the A-2 amendments to 2375? Hearing none, so ordered. And I do want to pay special thanks to Jack, who's worked hard and diligently searching over not only this bill, but all of them that we've worked to sort of fix up little things like this that really, I think,
we've been fortunate in our selection of counsel on this committee.
Yep.
I'd also like to go ahead and move House Bill 2375 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Grinsky has moved House Bill 2375 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
This one's behind the bill.
It's for Senator Grinsky.
Senator Hill, too. He's on the other one.
Senator Hill, yes, we were on the
He doesn't have very many trees, though.
He hasn't left the
Yes, I do.
Call the roll, please.
Up the county.
Do you go up the county?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good bill for Calhoun.
We're waiting on Senator Hanby. Let's take up 3352, which is the bill relating to pets.
I do have some amendments, Madam Chair. I've also got a hand in gross bill for the convenience.
Animal and tree day.
Animal and fish day.
Fish.
Very environmental here today. Fish, trees, pets.
Crime.
Pet rocks.
Crime. It all kind of goes together.
Happy play.
But they've done to our resources.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, the dash 12 amendments are amendments that I've drafted in to address some concerns that I've had with the bill and some current concerns that I expected the committee to have. And I can go through those when.
Yes, I think let's go through the amendments and then we'll hear from folks sign up.
Oregon is a major supplier of dogs and cats to medical research.
Really?
The bill has the bill has several areas of several main areas. The first are sections 1 and 2 contain.
If you get out the bill, folks, you can probably follow along better. Or is it? Oh, it's actually.
There's a hand and gross bill there.
There
that
we
may
are.
Want
okay.
To be looking at
Thank
attached
you.
To the
yes,
amendments.
We do need to look at the hand and gross bill.
Section 1 and 2 contain some definitions of the different parties involved in this bill. There were some amendments suggested by the pet industry that have been incorporated into the hand and gross bill. Those amendments exclude retail pet stores and change the other amendments. The purpose of these amendments are to define who must participate in the reporting requirement that follows. That's found in Section 3. There's a requirement that people that are engaged in the business of collecting animals from individuals and then reselling them to research facilities or whatever, there's a requirement that they send to the State Department of Agriculture, along with a $1 fee, a photograph of the dog or cat, the date of acquisition or birth of the animal, and some information about where they got the animal from.
This is tougher than buying a gun.
There's
no fingerprints.
Or
sub 4, as you can see in the Handengross bill, is a section I've had deleted. That would have done something that's pretty unusual in law, if not never found, and that would permit private individuals to conduct searches of facilities where animals are found. Anticipating some of the objections that members might have, I deleted that.
Which House committee did this come from?
House Judiciary Committee. Okay.
Section 4 was originally drafted as making it a Class C felony to engage in theft of companion animals, which are, that definition has been modified as well to a dog or a cat. I had that redrafted as a Class A misdemeanor, and there were a couple reasons for that that I've explained to some of the proponents of this bill. First of all is the fact that simply put, and we could discuss this at length, I suppose, simply put, there simply isn't room at the penitentiary for these types of offenses. And probably more importantly, at least from the proponent's point of view, is the fact that when you get down to the brass tacks of it, I refer to them as baby DAs. I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but relatively new district attorneys are going to be much more enthusiastic, and I think these folks will get better service in prosecuting these kinds of crimes than a felony attorney who maybe has just come off a two-week rape trial or something of that nature. So I think it's more appropriate. Also, these folks are going to be better served. There were some additional provisions deleted that were primarily housekeeping. The one that was left in is Section 5, which makes clear that for purposes of the theft by deception statute, a pet is an item having pecuniary significance to make sure that it can be prosecuted as a theft by deception, which again would be a misdemeanor depending on the value. With respect to the theft statute, it was drafted in such a way as well that in the relatively rare case that the animal is actually worth $500, it still could be prosecuted as a felony as it could now.
Okay, anything else, Jack?
No.
Given the great controversy around this bill, and as Jack stated, some parts of the bill that are not really allowed for anything else in the statutes, like entry on property, et cetera. It was my suggestion that at this stage of the session that we really can only move something that's relatively clean and without controversy and that doesn't do damage to the existing statutes and to the construct of other law. So that's what we have. Jack worked hard to put something together so that we can, in fact, have something to consider to move this bill, and I'd be happy to have you entertain any comments from the members, and then we will call up some folks who've been interested in this piece of legislation.
Yeah, I have one question, Madam Chair.
Senator Schumacher?
Small. You've defined companion animal as meaning any dog or cat. Wouldn't we want it to mean any dog or cat possessed by a person, et cetera, for purposes of companionship, security, hunting, or herding, as opposed to any dog or cat? I mean, you've got dogs that are, I assume, and cats, I guess, too, that for purposes other than those companion purposes. So a dog that's being used by a research facility would be an example. Wouldn't want to make that then a companion animal, or is that protected in some other way?
No, the definition was originally changed to limit it to pets that are dogs and cats. That the additional language might have been more appropriate to have been left in, Senator.
So what are you suggesting, that we have companion animal means
any
dog
or cat
possessed by a person?
Yeah.
That's really what we want to do there. I think rather than strike the whole thing, we would want to add, replace animal with dog or cat and leave
the rest of the subsection alone.
Right.
Yeah.
Are there objections to Senator Shoemaker's amendment on...
What's he sticking in there? I wasn't...
We're substituting in line 6 of the engrossed bill on page 2 the words dog or cat for animal, Senator.
And reinstating in the hand of engrossed bill that language that's been crossed out, the rest of the sentence.
So you're limiting companion animal to dogs and cats?
Yes.
Well, why? Maybe somebody has a pet pig. That shouldn't be stolen either. Well, seriously, people have some weird... I saw... lady on TV has a pet possum. I'm sure she wouldn't like that stolen either. Well, pet's a pet, I think. I don't think it's that absurd. There are people down in Southern Oregon who have pet wolves.
Okay, Senator Hemmings here. I think let's we'll set this aside and...
We had a pet coyote a few sessions ago.
Right, okay. Here we go. We'll close the work session, the public hearing on 3352, and have Senator Hamby come.
Well, right. Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. What?
We'll get back to this later.
Thing? Okay.
Half an hour.
Senator Hamby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While I'm waiting, I wonder if I might also ask, because we've just had a conference outside. Everyone's in agreement. The Attorney General's office, Claudia Burton, Dale Penn, to come forward also.
Okay, we are on Senate Bill 690.
690, right. If you recall, committee members, you heard this some time ago, and the request was made at that initial hearing on the bill. You'll find that you had supporting evidence of the need for such legislation because of a pending Penroy case in the South. If you glance at this morning's headlines, and I've made a micro copy for you, that case was decided. In the newspaper this morning, it does also note that, make reference, I should say, to both Georgia and Maryland, and I've included their statutes for your review also, as well as, and hopefully you can find in your folder, the definition of the ORS 427.007 that is referenced in the bill. But on page 2 of the bill is the focus of the bill, and that is that Oregon will no longer execute their mentally retarded citizens. We do have an agreement, however, just made outside the door. There was a question as to the drafting of the bill and the procedure. The Legislative Council drafted it as procedural with the rules being written. However, to clarify it, we would like you to sketch in additional language following line 12, and that would be these words.
On page 2, Senator?
Yes, on page 2, I'm sorry. Line 12, following the reference to ORS 427.005, and which has been established by a preponderance of evidence at a pretrial hearing. And then the word or.
If I may add Dale Penn for the Oregon District Attorney's Association. The reasoning for the need of an amendment there is that we had no guidance on procedure, when this would happen, how it would take place. And so that was the reason for this added language, is to make clear that this would be a pretrial hearing where the judge would make a determination, like a competency hearing. And if this person is a mentally retarded person under the statute, then the judge would make that finding and could then proceed accordingly. At that point, the judge would know that death penalty is not going to be a factor in this trial. We don't have to do voir dire or any other proceedings because the statute would be saying there would not be a sentencing hearing for the death penalty if the court has made a determination, a pretrial hearing, that this person is mentally retarded. So it gives us some guidance on just the procedure and how this would work out.
Claudia Brown, whoops. Mm-hmm.
I have a
question, Senator Schumacher.
Yeah, I'm looking at the definition of mental retardation, 427005, and it includes two different standards. I just want to make clear that you're intending the bill to reach people in both standards. First is a significant sub-average general intellectual functioning existing concurrently with deficits in adaptive behavior and manifested during the developmental period. That's one. And the other is persons of borderline intelligence may be considered mentally retarded if there is also serious impairment of adaptive behavior. Is it your intent that both those categories of mentally retarded persons would be exempted?
Claudia, do you want to speak to that?
They are certainly, in Claudia Burton of Salem, Oregon, for the record, Senator Shoemaker, they certainly would be included within the bill as presently drafted, because that is part of the Oregon definition of mental retardation. The committee wasn't happy with that second sentence. I suppose they could take it out. But as the bill stands, it would include that second sentence.
I think we want to be clear on what we're doing here.
So, as it stands, it includes that second sentence.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Dale, is preponderance of the evidence the usual standard of proof for this type of determination?
Yes. This type of Dale Penn, Madam Chair, and Senator Hill, I was trying to think what it would be compared to, and I suppose the only comparison would be a competency hearing. This is very similar.
Yes.
This would be the same situation as an affirmative defense in talking about a preponderance of the evidence. It basically simply would mean 51% if the judge finds that 51% he agrees or she agrees that it has been established this person is mentally retarded, this would kick in. That's the standard of proof. You could adopt clear and convincing. Preponderance was gathered from another state statute, and I don't know the state that that was used in.
Madam Chair, if I may speak to that. Preponderance was taken from the legislation, and I'm confident you have them in your folders, from the state of Oregon. And it certainly also speaks to Senator Shoemaker's earlier question about
Maryland.
Forgive me. What did I say?
Oregon.
And it speaks to Senator Shoemaker's earlier question about the second sentence found in Oregon state statutes. I call your attention to the fact that this is a national norm, this particular definition found in our ORS. And the Maryland statute identifies an intelligent quotient of 70 or below on an individual administered intelligent quotient test and impairment in adaptive behavior. So it's the same language as is found in our ORS, the same standard.
And that's in relation to this type, the same type of statute?
That's correct. Maryland does not allow the execution of a mentally retarded individual.
Jack?
I was simply going, Mr. Penn beat me to it. It would be somewhat akin to an affirmative defense, and by far the most common standard in relation to affirmative defenses is preponderance of the evidence, for instance, in the driving while suspended cases where you have an emergency defense and that type of thing. So.
Well, Madam Chair, the reason I raise it, because we are talking about someone, obviously, who's committed murder. And I guess it's... There are some crimes where a preponderance of evidence would seem fine, but when you're talking about someone who's committed murder, it's obviously different. So I don't know if I want to deviate, if that's the way it is in other states, and but I don't know, clear and convincing might be a little better. I at least raise as an issue, as we are.
Jack?
Perhaps using the analogy of an affirmative defense is a bad one, because you need to keep in mind that this is not a defense in any sense of the word. It's simply a mitigation as to sentencing. So.
I'm a neutral party. Madam Chair and Senator Hill, I think that is the policy decision for you to make, because we are only talking about aggravated murder, in fact, not just simple murder. That's the only time this is going to come into play. And so then one of our concerns, and the reason we asked for some language to give us some procedure, is this is a very high-profile case, very difficult procedurally, so we wanted to know, is this pretrial or after the conviction, that type of thing, and what is the standard. Clear and convincing and preponderance, I don't know in practical terms if there is a big difference in the amount of evidence the judge is going to use. Is going to have, he or she is going to have to find some evidence. And it only relates to the issue of whether or not the death penalty could be imposed. Under this scenario, if that is established to a judge's satisfaction to either preponderance or whatever you say, then death is not an option. Life imprisonment is.
Thank you.
Okay. Further comments? Questions?
Yeah. Question. The way the bill is written, if I read it correctly, there would be no possibility of life without the possibility of parole.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, we cannot assume the passage of that legislation, so we can only go with...
Can we do something so that if that passed, well, then I don't like it.
What do you mean, if that passes? If that passes, this certainly will be in place.
Well, except it says here that the court shall not conduct a sentencing proceeding. So it's under that sentencing proceeding that the jury and the court reaches a decision whether it's life without possibility of parole or not. If they don't conduct a sentencing proceeding, then you don't get to that, and they simply get simple life. It seems to me that society is not protected adequately by simple life for some of these people.
It is certainly the committee's option to add life without, I mean, without parole, without possibility of parole after it, and it would be unique only to these kinds of cases should the other bill not pass.
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, that was a point that I raised, but unfortunately, because we don't have that other statute in place, it's very difficult to tie into. But there is a subsection that deals with this sentencing issue when you don't have the death penalty involved, and that would be an easy subsection to just dovetail this into. But since it's not in place, I don't know exactly how that would
Be done. Well, I suppose, Jack, we could quote, we could hook it in to 3303 should it pass.
Sure.
Which is an additional amendment rather than trying to redraft something in this bill, which is what I was trying to say no.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, but I mean, I'm sure there's got to be a way to do it so that if that passes, it then applies here as well, and you go into that sentencing procedure.
Sure.
But, Jack, is that a technical thing that you can...
I think I can work with legislative counsel to take care of that.
I will pass these amendments around.
Yes.
Questions, comments? Okay. Thank you very much.
Hold on.
Okay.
Need to make, okay. I can note.
Madam Chair.
Senator Brenneman.
Where's the True Life bill?
Should be up any moment. Where is it?
It went down to the desk this morning, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's at the desk.
Waiting for the fiscal on it. It's going to be down there this afternoon.
So that's what the hang-up is, fiscal?
I don't like this bill. And if you really want to deal with the Senator Hemby, I know he's still here with that issue of mental retardation and True Life, as was pointed out by Senator Shoemaker, perhaps we should have dealt with it in that bill.
It says if you're retarded, you mm-hmm. should get True Life.
All right.
Well, I'm not, I'm personally not enamored with this bill necessarily.
I'd be much more comfortable dealing with this after the other bill is in place.
Yeah.
We know what the rules are, and we clearly take a mentally retarded person and make darn sure that they don't ever get out, because they're the most dangerous kind. They're going to get out in 20 years, and their mind is such that they're easily led into an aggravated murder situation. You've just got a time bomb on your hands. I'm against the death penalty, but I don't want those people running around the streets.
Okay. I'm not interested in pushing anything on the committee members now. It was something that Senator Hanby felt strongly about, and I was willing to join in, and I think that there's...
It's time will come next time.
Thank you very much. We'll move on then.
Catherine, are you ready? Where's Catherine? House Bill 2666 relating to garnishment.
Mm-hmm. We have a set of amendments up here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Marquis representing the Oregon Collectors Association. House Bill 2666 is a bill coming to you from the House Judiciary Committee. It passed the House with almost no votes. It creates a 60-day continuing garnishment against wages. That issue, I believe, has been visited by this commission, by this committee in Senate Bill 247, which created a continuing garnishment for counties. This bill is different than that bill in that it doesn't create a continuing garnishment until the debt is paid, but rather for 60 days. And again, it only applies to wage garnishments. We didn't feel it appropriate to try to create a continuing garnishment against bank accounts and the like. The bill is supported by the Oregon Bankers Association, the Consumer and Finance League, Credit Union League, and Legal Aid is here with some amendments, and I believe that they are supportive of the bill with those amendments, and I believe that they're simply conforming amendments to House Bill 2930 with respect to the garnishment forms themselves. This is a rather complicated process, but it has been carefully negotiated out in the House. We've worked on it most of the session. We believe we have a bill that will work, and we urge your support. I'll be happy to answer any questions. And Mr. Ryder is here from our association, who is the lawyer for our association, and he will go through the bill in detail if you wish.
Senator
Grinsky. Real briefly, how would this work with regard to priorities?
With regard to, Madam Chair, Senator Grinsky, under current law, the life of a writ of garnishment is 60 days from the date of issuance. Now, we talked with the state court administrators about office about that early on. They do not want to change the life of a writ. So we've left that intact, and if a... when you talk about priority, you're talking about multiple garnishments, which almost never occur anyway. But if I were a creditor and issued a garnishment on July 1, that would run for 60 days. If subsequently there were a garnishment issued 5 days later, there would be a notice sent from the employer telling me that there was already one in effect, because you can't have more than one in effect during the same 60 days. And it would also tell me what day it expired on. The second garnishment would take effect on the 61st day and would run
until 60 days had elapsed from the date of issuance of the second one. The second garnishment has priority over a third or fourth. Now, a second garnishee or garnishor would have the option of letting that garnishment stand, and in this case it would run for 5 days, or he could withdraw it, and that's on page 1, lines 15 and 16. He can dismiss the writ and issue one later in the 60-day period that the first one is in effect to pick up more than the 5 days. If he does that, he runs the risk of somebody else coming in ahead of him. But it's totally at the creditor's option, and we believe it should be. That's the kind of thing that we deal with now all the time.
Senator Grinsky?
Would it be possible for a creditor to renew or re-execute a second garnishment at the, on the 59th day, assuming that their debt hadn't been paid in full?
Madam Chair, Senator Grinsky, we addressed that problem in the House and were concerned about it, and Legal Aid was concerned about it too, in that somebody might take a 60-day writ and make it go forever. We've prohibited a plaintiff or a judgment creditor from issuing a second writ during the time that his 60-day writ is in effect, so that
a long time to get them back to normal because they were cowering, like they had been misused.
Okay. I appreciate it. Now, the committee has to go down to session in a minute and a half, and so we do need to ask you to shorten up your testimony. I appreciate that. We have two more folks. We've got Yvonne Simmons, who came from...
We're pro the amendment a little bit.
Right. Jack, you've been in the back room. Are there any other problems with these amendments?
The one additional concern is there is a provision in here allowing for inspection of reports at the Department of Agriculture, and I believe there are some folks who would like some additional language that would require a person going to the...
What amendments?
The hand and growth version, Senator.
There is a hand and growth version. We have not even got. Yeah, it's there. It's under that, right under that clip. We have a habit of putting the amendments first and the hand and growth bill second, folks.
We're on page 2, section 3, subsection 3 of the hand and growth version. This allows for a person to go to the State Department of Agriculture and basically go through the files to look for their lost animal. And there's been a suggestion made that a person doing that, a pet owner, would have to sign a statement saying he or she is in fact the owner of a lost or stolen animal, and that's the purpose they're looking for.
I don't think anybody has any objections to that. I wouldn't. People are going to do that anyway. Are there objections to that amendment?
We'll move that conceptually.
Okay. Right. Jack will move that amendment conceptually on line. I mean, Senator Hill moves it, and it will be inserted into line.
Can I just ask a question?
But first you have to come up and get your name on the record, and then you can ask the question.
All right. I just want to make sure I'm understanding things clearly.
Yes.
My name is Mary Lee.
Right.
What I'm understanding you to say is that if a person has lost a pet, they go in, sign a paper stating, I have lost a pet on such and such a
right.
date, and then they would be allowed to look to see if their pet was listed or
yeah.
a picture and so forth?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Fine.
Great. We have agreement.
Is that, is that is that right?
Oh, now, if you've got a problem, get up here and we'll have your name on the record.
Madam Chair, he's simply referring to the information that is listed. I
okay.
can incorporate that into the concept amendment.
Jack, would you clarify where you're looking? So
that's the bottom of page 2, the last line.
Okay.
They want a statement from the person saying that they are in fact the owner of a lost or stolen pet and some evidence of a current ownership or a current animal license. Of that nature.
Okay. Other objections to Senator Hill's conceptual amendment, which will be added to that page and that line?
It's
Hearing none, so ordered, okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Shoemaker?
Another amendment, in addition to the substituting the words dog or cat for the word animal and companion animal and leaving the rest of the definition intact, which I think we adopted.
Yes, we did adopt that.
Consistent with that, we then might want to change the language on page 3, lines 4 to 7, which talks about theft in the second degree. Subject of the theft is a dog or cat possessed by a person, et cetera, et cetera. We might want to say the subject of the theft is a companion animal as defined in the statute.
I can conform that language, okay. Senator.
Are there objections to that? Hearing none, so ordered. Anything else?
Jack?
Yes, sir.
Jack, the pet store owner is now fairly well satisfied that this doesn't...
Retail pet stores are specifically excluded, Senator. Okay. That's on line 17, page 1.
And Senator Brenner, I've also added, I gave a copy of the amendment just a few minutes ago to the person who represents the pet store owners, and I have, the fact that he's not here now would indicate, I hope, that...
Well, I want that added to the record, I guess,
yes.
Here. And it's pretty well limited to those people who are going to inspect it. They are in it. People who have lost animals and not open to the general public just for demanding access.
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Further comments? Senator Springer.
I got a letter from PCC. It looks like they misread the bill.
Well, I think there was some, the original bill and some of the parts of it were probably the original.
So they're not affected by this any longer?
Yes. Okay.
That's what they're asking for.
Yes.
Or at least the sign statement saying they are an owner.
Okay. Any other comments? Any other questions?
Well, Madam Chair, I would move the House Bill 3352-A12 amendments.
Okay. Senator Hale has moved the dash A12 amendments, and I assume that includes the omnibus amendment to pick up anything that we've agreed to conceptually here. Are there objections to that? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3352 as amended to the fourth and due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Hill's moves House Bill 3352, and it does go to Ways and Means as a prior referral to look at collecting the money.
So the motion should be to Ways and
Means with
the
due pass
recommendation.
Okay. Senator Hill's moved House Bill 3352 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair.
Senator Grinsky.
Realistically, does that mean that that's going to be the end of this bill?
Not necessarily. Senator Yee is down there.
That's true.
That's going to be part of the DEQ bill.
I think realistically that what they have to do is they have to rearrange the Department of Agriculture budget and make arrangements for those fees to cover whatever there is in terms of the record keeping and make a part that they actually collect the fees and they go to the Department of Ag budget. So I don't think that's necessarily so, but I do want to move it and get it down there so they can look it over and take care of the collection of the fees and the record keeping. That's an important part of what we're doing here. Call roll, please.
Senator Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Grinsky?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Shoemaker?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much, folks, for your patience.
Closing down now.